Welcome in to the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates, the original podcast for the Pirates. And I'm Dave Richmond, along with, ladies and gentlemen, Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well, guys. How are y'all?
Good. I want to give you a shout-out. I told you pre-show, but congratulations to your Atlanta Braves as they make the – I can't believe it's been this long. I guess it makes sense, but 2001 since they made the National League Championship Series – and congratulations to you, my friend. I know you're diehard and a fan of not only baseball like I am, but the Braves. So congratulations to you, sir.
I appreciate that. I unfortunately was not able to watch any of that. But, yeah, saw 7-0 victors.
Yeah, you won by a touchdown. We'll talk about the Pirates in just a minute. We'll get to our guest on the screen there, Corey Glore. But I want to give a shout-out to Steve Rockefort, who is assistant men's basketball coach, who is a big Houston Astros fan. They knocked off the A's today, 11-6. So I know he's like beyond happy on that. Also, Bubba, I want to give a shout out to HV3. One shot off the lead, had a great day today. Is it the Shriners Golf, whatever the golf thing is in Vegas? Want to give him a shout out. And one more thing before we get to Corey. Today, Justin Williams of the Carolina Hurricanes, he played 19 seasons in the NHL. He actually is one of the guys that won the Stanley Cup. He retired today, and we want to give him a shout-out. The Carolina Hurricanes had a really nice tweet today, and it simply had a picture of him holding up the that Stanley Cup and saying, thank you, Justin. So we want to give him a shout-out. I would imagine next season his sweater will be retired. I would have to think after 19 seasons and one of the key pieces of that 2006 against Stanley Cup. So I want to get a few things out there quickly, and Bubba got one of our favorite guests back on.
Yeah, welcome back, the play-by-play voice of the baseball Pirates, Corey Glore. Corey, how are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are we tonight?
Fantastic. I told you you had a crystal ball, and so we got stuff about baseball and all the different sports we can think of and get your feelings on things. But obviously, starting off with football, just want to get your take. Very happy once again, my friend, that you're in Greenville and where you belong. You've always been a part of Pirate Nation, at least since 2016, and now we have you in Greenville at home.
Yeah, and this is going to be my first season around Pirate football game days, and that's not quite the case as we sit at the moment. So luckily, next week there will be some semblance of a fan group put into that stadium, but this is not how I anticipated the first fall football season as a Greenville resident looking, here we are anyway. So it's good to be out here, and you know, I'm working some of the Pirate home games up in the press box. So I was there 2 weeks ago, and so just to kind of be around that was good, and it's been a while since I've been frankly on that campus, so it's good to be back there.
And hey, Bubba, you know, Corey, when you're looking back on your broadcasting career, like 50-year-plus career, you can say one of the craziest seasons I ever had was probably 2020 when the baseball team didn't make all the way through the season and all the stuff that's been going on with COVID. I would have to say this will be right up there with your most memorable and not such a good way seasons of your broadcasting career.
It's going to be hard to beat. Memorable is an interesting word because I've kind of forgotten about it already. Like it was so short, and we didn't even make it a month. It was so short, even though it ended so crazily. It feels so long ago that it's, I remember calling games and I remember the last game and all that, but it's just been so long that it kind of feels like it was a bit of a fever dream that season. Like it felt real, but you can't quite put your finger on it actually happening. It's a very strange feeling.
No question about it. And the fact that, have you talked to Coach Godwin recently? I mean, I know he's got to be fired up, chomping at the bit, the competitor that he is. I'm really proud, by the way, of the Pirates as far as the baseball team, the inside the classroom, really getting it done semester after semester after semester. And I remember asking Coach last year about not playing. He said, not playing. They want to be practicing. if they don't get good grades, which is, you know, I brag about Coach Godwin all the time, but he really is the perfect coach for us and for many different reasons. And to me, I'm one of these guys that, as much as I love athletics, I believe academics and athletics go hand in hand. One is not more important than the other. People say, yeah, you get a degree, but I think if you're an athlete, both of those things are extremely important. So for those guys to have, over 3.5 GPA or something?
I think, yeah, it was a minimum over 3.5. Best semester, I think, of many good semesters under Cliff Godwin. And after that initial weekend when the season got canceled on a Thursday, and so it was kind of taking the weekend there in mid-March to react to it and be kind of take the emotional side of it, which I think everybody did, whether they were associated with the program or just in life in general, kind of came to a screeching halt that weekend. But then it was made very clear that, all right, the season's done. Your classwork's not. I mean, you still have two more months of classwork and you're all going to be leaving now. So you've got to buckle down and do it. And they did. I last talked to Cliff about 2 months ago, actually. He did a Little League broadcast with me, the City Series Championship. And so he joined me on air, and we spent a good amount of time together that night. He's doing well. I think getting some semblance of direction of what they're able to do right now is key. And everyone is kind of in that boat, whether they're at ECU, whether they're at other colleges around the country, whether it's baseball, basketball, whatever, getting some idea of what they're able to do at the moment. I know baseball is practicing right now. I believe they're doing intra-squad scrimmages right now that are closed to the public. Like, you're not allowed to go see them, unlike previous years. But they're somewhat in a normal calendar right now for fall ball. They won't have any games or any scrimmages against like Liberty like they did last year, but they're actually on the field and doing work from what I've heard and from the occasional people I've talked to from within the program. So they're kind of full speed ahead to a normal mid-February start. I think everyone is right now. We'll see. I mean, fingers crossed we stay that way. I think we're a good spot for that to be that. For a normal mid-February start, whether that's a normal-looking schedule or whether it looks different, I think that still is – we still don't know what a basketball schedule is going to look like. So there are more things to come. But as of right now, from everything I've heard and from what I'm aware of, baseball is kind of moving at a somewhat normal clip at the moment like they would in most Octobers.
And by the way, as I read today, Corey, you probably already know this, but – basketball will actually start practice next. They are able to start next Wednesday, the 14th, and they have 42 days to get in. And my understanding is 30 practices, which is
I think that's something Joe Dooley would love. Actually, I think he's good with that. Just kind of knowing his work ethic and wanting to get his pieces in place and his mindset in place. And yeah, Thanksgiving week is the start date for both basketballs. And right now, men's basketball, I think both men and women have a Thanksgiving tournament they're going to. Now, a lot of these tournaments are getting really reshuffled. So as of right now, from everything I heard, those are still on. But beyond that, I don't know if anyone quite knows what a non-conference schedule looks like for either basketball program right now. And then conference play should start in January. And hopefully that's not terribly disrupted from what we've seen in sports past. But yeah, basketball is going to be probably going kind of a drag race style practice session here very shortly. I mean, they both been on campus. Those teams have been on campus and doing some work, but official practices start soon. And from everything I've heard, they're kind of full go here pretty shortly.
Corey, it's one of the things that you probably don't know just yet. This is probably coming your way on down the line. But speaking of basketball, I know you've done a couple of basketball games or multiple basketball games in the past for sure. So do you have any idea? Do you think you'll do a few this year?
No idea. I haven't spoken to anybody about that. I mean, again, there's the schedule's not in place really yet, and so no one quite knows what basketball is going to look like. They're starting later than usual. And so, I mean, I saw earlier today, John Rothstein of CBS Sports said we might not get full schedules released for some of the major conferences, including the American, until the start of November. So, because there's so much to figure out, and that means that's 3 weeks before a season's really supposed to start. So I have no idea. I have not been in communication with any of the higher ups in terms of doing any basketball broadcast this year, because they got to figure out what basketball games there will be. And so they're kind of putting the pedal down to that right now while making sure football still goes on a week-to-week basis here.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait for that. And obviously we talked about baseball. Football is what we're doing right now. And so I want to get your take. I know that that you are now here in Greenville. It's your first season here. What is your take on things as far as the first 2 weeks? Pirates are 0-2 right now, but that doesn't mean, I want to say this before you answer the question for people. Don't jump off the bandwagon. Don't jump off the cliff just yet, because yes, it's two games, but you never know what can happen. If you think you're going to lose every game, it's no point to even go out on the field if you think you're going to lose every week. So how do you feel about the Pirates so far?
I liked a good amount of, frankly, what I saw against UCF. Eventually, the UCF pace offensively got the best of ECU defensively. And if you're going to fumble it three series in a row at midfield or around midfield in the first half in a close game, you are going to lose. I don't care who you're playing. That's just going to be the case. When you're playing then the 13th best team in the country, you're going to pay for that. So I was impressed by the rushing attack that week. Kind of the four-headed running back team that was put out there, and we saw it again last weekend too, the four main backs. I liked a lot of what I saw from that group, especially the new guys, Harris and Mitchell, I was really impressed with. Last week was befuddling to me. I didn't think they would get as gashed as they were against Georgia State. Defensively was a little bit frustrating, but the fact that they couldn't open up any holes for that running game, the fact that Ehlers didn't have time to do much of anything, it kind of seemed like the offensive playbook just kind of got thrown out the window almost immediately by just how the first quarter devolved. And so that was surprising to me. I thought they were on level, if not better than Georgia State heading into that game. And they got punched pretty quick in that one. So this week against another team that they are on the same level with, if not talent-wise, better than, I would certainly expect and hope for a much better start this weekend than what we saw in Atlanta last weekend.
Bubba, you know, the one thing for me that's opened up is the – if we could just, I was thinking about that this morning, if we could just get the consistency of, like you're talking about, Corey, the way they played against UCF, and there was some bright spots, special teams last week. That's what's really crazy when you have Jake Verity was doing well place kicking. You have the Tyler Snead 31-yard fake field goal rush for a touchdown. You have Blake Prohl block a punt. It comes right back, so he runs in. I mean, those kind of things you would think that you would win the ball game when you have the special teams was playing through the roof. And you look at the second half, the defense didn't play all too bad. It's just that early on, like you talked about, like Bubba and I was talking about, you had three scores, Corey, in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Three scores in 7 minutes. I mean,
after a pick six to start the game, like right after the first play of the game, you took it back to the house.
Yeah. You just can't have that. So that's what I'm looking for this week is, to have more consistency and the fact that you don't have a offensive touchdown in the game all across the board. The pick six, the very first play of the game, 6 seconds into the game, you're up 7-0. You had our turnovers. We're getting turnovers this year, but we're also committing a lot of turnovers. And I'm just hopeful that I think the defense will play better this week. The question mark, surprisingly, I think we all thought the offense was going to be pretty good this year. We just need to score a lot of points because the defense was going to be giving up a lot of points. But it seems like the offense hasn't played as well as what we thought.
If they have time to put everything in motion, then they're going to be a really good offense. But I think what we saw last week, Georgia State, and mainly a 3-4 defense, was collapsing the pocket, whether there was no running lanes opened, and Ehlers had fraction of a second or two to decide where to go, to the point where the occasional time where he had time, he threw a pick, like, because it was almost surprised he had time. They have the skill pieces to be a high-powered offense. Do they have the time to get those guys downfield, get those guys moving? That's the biggest question for me this week, against a USF team that you can get. Like, you can get this team, but you got to have a much better start than what we saw last week.
And when you have C.J. Johnson, what was it, Bubba? Help me with the stats. Is it 2 catches for 1 yard? Or was it 3 catches for 1 yard, something like that?
Last week it was 1 catch for 0 yards.
And he had two grabs against UCF.
He had those two catches. The first play of the game against UCF, and then in the second half he had about a 35-yard touchdown catch where he caught the ball on a dig route and then kind of stiff-armed the defender and ran it in on the boneyard end.
And he's going to get focused. Yeah, like, he's going to get covered. He's the number one target. That's allowed Omotosho to kind of break out in his first 2 weeks. He's become kind of the guy on the other side of the field right now for the Pirates. And if you can get two big targets lined out wide, and then you have Snead and Prohl in your slot, that's the makings of a really dynamic passing attack here. But CJ is getting double covered, and he can't quite spring free of coverage right now in the first 2 weeks. If you can get him a little bit of separation, then that really gets the ball rolling in my mind.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really surprised me. Like Dave was saying earlier, just it didn't shock me so much that we lost to Georgia State, but just the way we were held to 292 yards of offense. And I know after the way we ran the ball more effectively against UCF in the first half when the game wasn't decided, that Georgia State was geared up to stop that. But, never would have guessed that game would unfold the way it did. And we've already referenced the way we had a pick six, which was one of three turnovers we forced, and two special teams touchdowns, and then lose by three touchdowns. Just hard to figure.
It really is. Moving forward, though, with USF, we're going to a Saturday game in Tampa. Corey, what do you think the keys to victory are? You follow the, I know, baseball extremely close, and then basketball and football as well. What do you see? What do you think the Pirates will have to do their strength to be assessed?
It's easier said than done, but if protection's not going to be, it's not going to last long once a ball is snapped, then quick hitters over the middle for Ehlers to Snead to Prohl to whoever you can find over the middle, tight end. They rarely throw to tight ends, but you might have to get that more involved here. Get the ball out of his hands quick, because that offense needs the passing game to go. And if you're not going to be able to give Ehlers enough time to really set and look downfield, go through his progressions, then you need to have quick goes initially here and try and get a rhythm started, so that if you can get that going, that'll open things up again for your four running backs that you've been using pretty regularly here. And more, I would love to see a couple more design runs for Ehlers too, to make that a real multifaceted weapon here. It all starts up front. And if you can give Ehlers some time, then this is going to look a little bit more fluid. If the time isn't going to be there, then a lot faster plays need to be in the cards here to get that thing going. Defensively, I mean, defensively really surprised me against Georgia State, where they were just really getting gashed to and fro. But USF, frankly, to me, doesn't have as potent of an offense as Georgia State even does. So if you can give Holton time, then things are going to look much better. If you can't give him more time, then you need to have these quick little dump offs over the middle to just move the ball and get a little bit of rhythm going for your quarterback, because he hasn't been in a rhythm in 2 weeks.
Corey, no, a few minutes ago, you referenced Keaton Mitchell. And yeah. Keaton Mitchell, he had 10 touches against UCF and produced probably 80, 85 yards of offense, something like that. Last week, he only had one carry. So I'm hoping that Donnie Kirkpatrick and the staff will find a way to get ball in his hands this week. I was surprised by that last week. I don't know if it boiled down to maybe pass protection with him being a smaller back as opposed to a Penix or a Chase Hayden being a larger back. So
I think that lent to it. I also think in the early stuff that we've seen from Mitchell, once he gets a little bit of space, that's when he becomes a real threat here. But if there's no space available to him, then he's going to get swallowed up pretty quickly. Not a lot of space is available last weekend. So that's a guy that you need to either get him kind of to find a little bit of room for him and get him into the open field. He is the smaller of the four backs right now, so he's not going to be able to help you out much in pass protection, and the Pirates needed more of that last week. So if they can get a little bit better pass protection, then I think he becomes a bigger focal point of the offense, and he can be really dynamic, at least from what I saw in the season opener. I think he's got the best speed, the best shiftiness of the four running backs right now, and as a freshman. So I think there's something there, but you can't use him in all the – in every down right now. He's got to be in specific situations because he's young, he's raw, and he's smaller than everyone else. So I think there's the potential to be something really, really good, but he can't work in every situation.
And a continued bright spot
right now.
Go ahead, Dave. I had a little bit of lag on
Demetrius Mooney. Yeah, sorry about that. But Demetrius Mooney has been injured. Another guy that I really like a lot. I think he has a lot to add to the obviously the running back room. And Corey, I was telling the guys, this is probably the deepest we've had as far as the running back room in a long, long time. That you really have that are really talented. When Mooney gets healthy, that'll be great for Mike Houston and the staff. I think that'll help them a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get not just a deep running back room, but everyone has a little bit of a different skill set, then it becomes very, very hard to stop and plan for. They're not full strength. They're close, but they're not there yet. But if it becomes a pretty good challenge for Donnie Kirkpatrick and Mike Houston, if you can have all five of these guys and figure out who needs to play when. And the first month of the season is kind of feeling out who can do what for you. And you haven't had Mooney yet, but you kind of know what he's capable of doing. So once he comes back, that gives them kind of a wealth of options in the backfield. And that should open things up again downfield. I mean, they work hand in hand. One goes in with the other, and you heard Donnie Kirkpatrick say, we don't want to be one or the other. We want to be a mix of the two. We want to be run and pass. We want to make you really guess what we're going to do. And the pieces are there to do it. They just haven't quite clicked together yet.
With this game seemingly having the makings of a low scoring game, Jake Verity, he continues to be excellent and so reliable and automatic almost. He had three field goals against Georgia State and a long of 48. And so if this game does unfold as a close competitive scoring game, keep an eye on Jake Verity.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at the weather yet for Tampa either, and it could be a little bit dicey down there. It changes kind of by the day, right? And so that could have a strong influence of how things look Saturday night as well in terms of what type of game is going to be. I was a little bit caught off guard that the Georgia State game was as high scoring as it was. I know the over under was pretty big, but I thought those two were going to keep it kind of like in like under 30, like first to 30 might've won that game. And that was technically that played out, but there's a lot more scoring there than I anticipated. I don't expect that this weekend.
Yeah, as of right now, Corey, on the high on Saturday is about 90 or 91. And there's about a 40% chance of rain in Tampa.
Well, that sounds miserable. Enjoy, fellas.
You could be Marty Fuhrer, but well, those guys aren't going to be down there anyway. But can you imagine being a sideline reporter on that one? Wow.
I'm not
for sure.
Yeah, I've experienced balmy football weather sidelines in my past, not on this level, but in high school level. And so it can get pretty miserable pretty quickly down there.
No doubt about it. Want to ask you, as far as baseball is concerned, MLB, who do you like? We were talking in the beginning of the show with the Braves making it. Who do you think is going to win the whole thing?
I think this year, I think we almost deserve the Astros. I hope we don't get that, just for very deep personal reasons. But I mean, the Dodgers are clearly the best team in baseball, and the gap's right. Pretty wide. So if they don't do it this year, then you're going to, I mean, you have a short season, you have a weird playoff structure, and you're still not even close to anyone else in terms of someone being as good as you. Like, they're the best team. They should finish off the Padres tonight. They should beat the Braves. And then, I mean, whoever they see in the AL, I don't know who it's going to be at this point, but it should be them. I don't know if it will be them. Baseball is weird, as we're seeing from the Astros, but the Dodgers don't have a weakness anywhere. And so best of luck to all you Braves fans. Congrats on getting there. You're going to be quite an underdog, but it should be the Dodgers. I'll go Dodgers over Rays, which is chalk, I know, but Dodgers over Rays.
Right. Sounds good.
Are we welcoming in our next guest?
I do have to bolt on you guys here. I apologize for that, but okay. I do have to flee. So
all right.
I will see the room.
All right, man. Well,
we appreciate seeing you as always.
This is like every awkward Zoom conversation goodbye with my family right now. So I'll just say it's good to see you gentlemen again. Good to talk to you gentlemen again. Give my best to Kyle from LaGrange. And sooner rather than later, we'll be previewing a baseball season, I would imagine, here.
Sounds good, man. Enjoy it. We'll see you soon.
See you guys.
Take care. Corey Glore, the voice of the ECU Pirates. Glad to have him here tonight. And Kyle from the Grange is getting ready for, I guess, his trip to Boone. But with us right now, Bubba, very excited. You outdid yourself again, another great Pirate. And he has a unique take on this game coming up on Saturday night.
Yeah, I reached out to Kevin quite a ways back as far as having him on the show, but this is the perfect week to have him on. He played 3 years with the Pirates, and then also spent a year with Coach Holtz down in Tampa for USF. Welcome into the show, Kevin Gidger.
How you guys doing, man? Thank you for having me.
No doubt about doing it. Well. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Wanted to have you on, obviously, with your take of being not only a Pirate but a Bull, and to get your thoughts on the game coming up on Saturday. Pirates are 0-2, and with us being 1-2, I know that Coach Scott was talking about with the Pirates are a dangerous team when they're back against the wall. You know, the thing I was talking about earlier, Kevin, I was thinking about this morning getting ready when we had the show. I'm looking for consistency, and the term playing four quarters of football, the complete game. And I think that's the thing. This is a young team, some inexperience. There's been some bright spots. But as far as if they could play a complete game, being a cliche, I know, but that'll make a huge difference, and that's when they'll have a chance to really win.
Yeah, it's kind of tough. I mean, coming from a schedule from USF, coming off of playing two ranked teams, I guess they had a little bit more competition in their two losses than we did in our two losses. I mean, Georgia State, who would have known to come in, and I think they won like by 20, if I recall correctly. But they kind of mirrored each other at the same time. Both teams kind of in that rebuilding phase. And I watched the first game with the Pirates a couple weeks ago, and I was just, man, I just missed good, solid ECU football back when I was playing with Skip Holtz during that whole era, back-to-back conference champs. It was just a different breed that we – and a different tenacity about us and how we went about playing each game. And I saw a status from one of my former teammates, Giovanni Ruffin, who was on one of the conference championship teams. And he was saying, man, we just missed that good, you know, Pirates. You go down to Greenville, it's a good Saturday. You got a chance to win every Saturday. And just looking at the past three or four years, I think we've been, what, 3-9, then 4-8. I'm like, gracious, guys, we got to turn this thing around. But in the same instance, you got to start recruiting some great talent.
And we have done that, Kevin. That's the one thing with the Pirates under Coach Mike Houston. I think it's I'm not saying it because he's our coach. I really believe that recruiting the last couple of years, and the last year of Mo, and then last couple under with Houston, I really feel like this is headed in the right direction. The problem is the program was so down.
Yeah.
And the very fact that we're having guys that give up, I don't see the guys giving up right now. I think there's been some times when on defense there's been some guys that are playing the wrong they're not playing the wrong scheme. They're playing, you know, they're playing one thing and then the other guys are playing something else, and that's why we've had some busted coverages, things, little things like that we can tweak. But as far as what you're talking about, I believe the program. And the program started in 1932. I wasn't around in 1932, obviously, thank God. If I did, I'd look great. But the very fact that when
stop lying, Dave.
What's that?
I was messing with you because you said I was not around in 1932.
I was going to say, I wasn't around. I didn't become a Pirate until 1986. So there was a lot of football before then. But to me, this is the lowest point that we've ever had in the history of the program. And some people hearing that might say that's a strong statement. But my point is that we need to be patient. It's very hard. I know Kevin and Bubba, I've played not at the level y'all have, but I'm a competitor. If it's checkers, I want to beat my grandma. And
I'll take that one.
and so it's very hard, not only as the competitor, but that's my school. And I'm a proud Pirate. And it's very difficult to watch the program that you love. The reason why I went to East Carolina is how much I love the sports at East Carolina. I think a lot of people pick schools like me. They pick the school because of the athletics. Maybe not all, but I wanted to be a Pirate. And so it hurts. And I don't know, but I wanted to ask you that. The reason I brought that up is, how do you feel as a former player? How hard is that for you to watch the program that you excelled in, and you guys were — the one word that's missing for me is swagger. I felt like your era, the whole thing was a lot of swagger on the team. And to me, that's what's missing. How do we get that back? And how do you feel as a former player?
Yeah. So, I mean, it starts with having some guys that are going to step up and be leaders, and having that blue collar mentality. That's one thing that Holtz put into us every single practice. And it is hard because seeing where, I mean, obviously when I played, it was 8, 9, 10 years ago, however long it was. But at the same time, like you said, that swagger, man, we just knew coming into anybody, Virginia Tech, West Virginia, NC State, it didn't matter who it was, bring it, and we're going to show up. And I think the one thing that gave us that upper hand advantage is in the practice, it was so physical. Like, we really had practices where at the end of the practice, you're just ready to go back to the dorm or your apartment, just go to sleep. That's how hard we went after it with each other. And that physicality, by the time we got to the game day, it was just like that team was either going to show up or they're gonna fold, because we're bringing our pads and we're getting after it. So just seeing, to be honest with you guys, I don't think I watched past the past the halftime some of these games, because it's like I don't know the right answers for how to turn this thing around. And it is tough watching how much I bleed purple and gold. It's hard watching those guys. I don't know. I can't say they're not competing, but they got to have some kind of attitude about when they're in the games. Like somebody knock somebody's helmet off. Somebody run somebody over. Somebody catch somebody over the middle. Like grab that spark, and then man, you can just grab some momentum from one turnover. And then when I see us getting three turnovers in the first quarter a couple weeks ago, I'm like, man, turnover is the number one statistic in regards to wins and losses. And I hope, man, I hope within the next 3, 4, 5 years we can turn this thing around. I don't think personally it's going to be anytime soon. I think it's going to take a little bit of time to develop a true championship team.
There's no question the next year or two. In fact, Kevin, I know Bubba is going to have a question. I'll just make this quick point, Bubba. I've said all along, I didn't have this because of COVID, and it takes time to really build this thing. I think it was, I don't think there's any of us that really knew how bad this program was. And so Coach Houston has even said that he didn't know how bad things were when he took over the program, you know? And so that's the thing we are now, is that, yeah, we've had 5 straight losing seasons, and I understand the frustration because, I mean, who's not frustrated? Who wants to lose?
Yeah,
I mean, please, if there's a person out there who wants to lose, we want to hear from you, because I think that's nuts. But the very fact that it's going to be next year before we really, I believe, see the fruits of the labors of all the hard work of Holt Naylor, CJ Johnson, Tyler Snead, all the guys on offense and defense, the Jaquan McMillans, and we can just go on and on with all the great players that we have. A lot of talent, we just don't have the experience. And then you're a perfect example of a guy that knows how to win. That's one thing right now. People don't realize how hard it is to win. I know, yeah. Coach Houston talked about his press conference tonight. He's exactly right. That we take it for granted for the many years that you guys were out there winning games. We used to be snobs about bowl. We're not going to go to this .com bowl or that bowl. And now, man, any bowl right now is looking really good.
It doesn't matter. Get us somewhere. Get that. What is it? 6 wins. You get a bowl. Yeah, just get us the 6. Even if we don't go to bowl, just give us 6 wins. Give us 6-6. Break even for a year. It's been some trying times for the ECU Pirates, and then I can't imagine for the seniors right now having to play in front of a limited crowd and not getting that full experience, your last shebang. Because man, those are the best 4 years of any athlete's life that plays Division I football. Those are some great, great years, and all the things you learn, and now look back, all the dog days that I went through, the games, the practices, the study halls, like the organization you had of each day. You kind of bring that along for me, developing as an entrepreneur and business and so forth. You bring that dedication, that responsibility, bringing that energy, that attitude, and that motivation, throughout now being, 32 years old. You know, back then I was playing 2021. I still transfer some of those same principles that Coach Holt installed into me back over to what I'm doing now.
Kevin, take us back to 2005, 2006, your recruitment. I know you were out of the 757. Tell us how you wound up at East Carolina, how Coach Holt's staff made you decide to be a Pirate, and just have an opportunity to be part of 3 bowl games, to win a couple of conference championships, and then that decision ultimately followed Coach Holt to Tampa and USF.
Man, it was a journey. I'll never forget Coach Shankweiler, Steve Shankweiler. He's still playing to this day, still coaching to this day. I played with his son, Court Shankweiler, who lives in the area around Raleigh. He gave me a chance. He's the only coach that gave me a chance after seeing my grades weren't the best coming out of high school, involved in the wrong crowds. But my coach McGowan, was my high school coach. He started putting me during PE, he would put me in the janitor's closet so I can catch up on my work, do my homework before I went home. Actually had to go to school after school. There was another school I went to in order to bring my GPA up. And Coach Shank, I would see him, he'll come take me out of class, he'll just make sure I was on the right path. because they needed that H/ fullback for their system that they ran. And they saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. So as soon as I got to East Carolina, I went from tight end right into fullback. So I went from like catching a lot of balls in high school to being in the trenches with some of those big guys. I mean, C.J. Wilson, the Limbo Josephs, the Scotty. I mean, there's so many coaches came and went, but Shank was the one that I could tell he was there for the long haul. We still talk every now and then to this day, and I'm grateful for him because he's the one that didn't give up on me. So just making it out of Virginia Beach. Once I got to Greenville, I really never looked back and kind of just looked up to my coaches as my father figure, because I didn't have a father figure around that time. And they took me under the wing, although they're all nice during the recruiting process. Everything's awesome. You're the best. Once you get that, when you sign that scholarship and you get in there, you're just you're another guy fighting for a spot. And I'm grateful I had that tenacity by myself. I ended up starting 32 out of 33 games I played in. And I'm still grateful to Shank, and I message him every now and then to this day, thanking him for giving me that opportunity, because it taught me a lot about not only as a player but as a man.
Well, I was telling you, I was going to say, Kevin, I know that the offensive line didn't play very well last week, and some people think it's coaching, but you also have to have the players. No matter how great a coach you are, you still have to have the talent. And you were talking about recruiting. Offensive line and defensive linemen are not something you can go outside and pick them off trees like an apple. God knows, I wish there were, our Pirates would be winning a lot more games. But just talk about that with Coach Shank. I think that I'm not a Coach Shank apologist, but I think he's getting a bad rap this week because, you know, once again, the offensive line is like a well-oiled machine. When it's running, you know, it's great. But the problem is we've had some injuries, and then we have guys as chemistry, and there's no chemistry on that line right now. And I think we have decent talent on the line, but with injuries and no chemistry, it's really showing up the last two games.
So what was your question again?
I'm just saying about as far as Coach Shank, he's a great coach, and it's not Coach Shank that's the problem, is my point. It's definitely not coaching.
Yeah, and with Shank coaching the O-line, man, he was so passionate about everything he did in practice, and he just took that O-line and made sure that they always had their assignments. And he's a tough coach, and without an offensive line, you have no offense. So, like you said, with those injuries, man, and just looking at our size, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's me, but I feel like our O-line is not as big as what it used to be, even on the D-line. And I forget the average when we had our O-line, the average weight we had. But, I mean, we just had guys, whether they're big or small, they were just physical, man. They taught the physicality about the way they coached us. It was like you would think when we were practicing that the defense was another team from another school, the way we practiced. And when you bring that type of physicality about an offensive line, I mean, it's just you got to be in that war mindset. And just watching our guys nowadays, I don't know, man. Maybe it's a different breed of football. Maybe they pass more. I don't know what it is. But it's a little different in my eyes.
And, Kevin, what do you think the keys? You obviously know the USF program as well. What do you think the keys are for the Pirates to get a victory on Saturday night?
It's a late game. I heard him talking about the heat being 91 chance of rain. So those things can catch you off guard. I remember going to camp down there, man, and being exhausted within the first 10 minutes of practice. Being that it's late, I don't think it'll be that much of an issue. But for ECU, I think they need to establish that ground and pound game to open up the passing. I mean, we got what is it, C.J. Johnson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's an athlete. I've been hearing about him, but I think it's time to give him a chance in regards to getting a running game, so they're not just solely focused on their number one asset on offense, in my opinion. So just getting that run going, and that way you can open up the deep ball, you can open up the across the middles, and can kind of get him on that one-on-one versus being two-on-one. Because I think if you get him some some more touches, and you might have to force it to him. I don't know, but if that's the guy that's going to score, we got to find a way to get it to him. And the one way to get it to him is making sure you establish that run game, get those linebackers in that box.
No question about it. It's going to be great. And Kevin, love to have you back on. Hopefully we can have you back on during the season. Pirates got a big game and their backs against the wall. Sometimes that's when you play your best, man, is when, when you know that the urgency is there. Starting 0-2 is not the way you want to start. You definitely don't want to start 0-3.
No. And I'll definitely be tuned in 7 PM this Saturday. Thursday on Saturday. I'll be tuned in on 7 PM.
All right.
Hey, Kevin, before we let you run, Kevin, I know you own a gym there in Raleigh. I believe you've referenced that throughout program. I'm talking about being an entrepreneur, but go ahead and plug that once again before we let you go. It's on the top of the screen now. Find a way fitness, get your mind right is the motto. So tell folks once again where you're located in Raleigh and so forth.
Yeah, so if you're up in Raleigh, we actually just got ranked the number one gym in Wake County. So from Raleigh to Holly Springs, anywhere you go in Wake County, we just got ranked number one. And I say that in the most humble way because it's been a heck of a journey. As of 2 weeks ago, we got ranked number one again by Wake Weekly. So if you're anywhere near Raleigh, you want a good workout, come on by. I train a lot of Pirates. It's pretty cool seeing the Pirates. I got a lot of state fans we got to get through. But anytime you're in Raleigh, feel free to come by. It's a great experience, and I'm helping a lot of people change their health and fitness in a major way.
Sounds great. Really proud of you, Kevin. Thank you.
Appreciate y'all.
And don't be a stranger. Love to have you in your football season. No doubt. Congratulations to Kevin. Appreciate him very much for all the great things he's doing there, Bubba, and Raleigh. And I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to talk about that at the beginning of the interview. But we're going to continue. We're doing our private Pirate preview right here on the Sports Objective. Again, you can watch it on Facebook Live or on our YouTube channel. Then if you miss it, the live version, obviously we're archived on Facebook and on YouTube. Bubba, a big game Saturday night. We want to get the USF perspective. And a gentleman that's been on with us before is back.
Actually, it's this guy's first time. We've caught up with the Daily Stampede before, which is USF's SB Nation site. Welcome in, Seth Barnador. Seth, we appreciate you joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate the invite.
No doubt. Want to talk about the big game Saturday night. A big game for both teams, Seth. 1-2 for the Bulls, 0-2 for the Pirates. Both teams were picked towards by the coaches and the media. Towards the bottom, obviously, between, I guess you could argue either one would be the cellar dweller, if you will. And so this is a big game for both teams, don't you think?
Yeah, I think this is probably going to be the best chance for both teams to get a win. Maybe the easiest chance. Both these teams can be frisky, and I've watched a little ECU. They kind of seem like they can get streaky and get a little hot, and they might be able to rise up and beat somebody down the line. But I think for both teams, this is probably your best shot, at least for a few weeks.
No question. One of the things I want to talk about, I know, and then I'll get Bubba in the next question, would be the speed. I've been really impressed in the past with South Florida, with USF, with your speed. It looks like, again, you guys one of the guys was recruited by Coach Montgomery, the previous coach of ECU. I remember Johnny Ford, really great back, and looks like he's doing really well for the Bulls.
Yeah, they've got some explosiveness at running back. They're kind of it's odd. They're actually lacking it a little bit at receiver compared to what they've had in the past. You don't really have that guy that can take the top off the defense, and that's kind of allowing people, especially the better teams, to load up on them, play some man coverage, and dare USF to beat them downfield. And that's where USF's really struggling right now, is that quarterback and receiver. So guys aren't separating, and your quarterbacks aren't able to hit throws in tight windows. So it's been a rough year so far, and that's kind of been due to the lack of explosiveness at receiver.
Seth, Dave referenced the quarterback situation, and against Cincinnati, what you played for, I think it was. And another member of the local media asked East Carolina's first-year defensive coordinator, Blake Harrell, about that on Wednesday night. Tell us what you're hearing. I know Jeff Scott is playing that pretty close to the vest. But I did see earlier today, I guess it was, where he made the comment that whoever entered the week fourth on the depth chart has risen to second.
Yeah, so the rumblings are that it's probably going to be Jordan McLeod to start. He started off the season and he started off the first two games, and he came in the second half last week against Cincinnati and moved the ball a little bit. He still ended up throwing two interceptions just to get in on the get in with everybody else that threw one. But he kind of had the best drives last week. They also played Contravis Marsh, a freshman from Miami who led a really good Miami Central program to a state championship. He's really talented and he's got a lot of physical tools, but I don't know if he's quite ready. And then we also saw Cade Fortin, who was a North Carolina transfer. And I think he's kind of – he was the handpicked guy coming in. I know Scott had the option to take some other transfers at that position, and he kind of handpicked Fortin. He's been unavailable for the first – he was unavailable for the first two games. Finally got to play last week. Played limited reps. I think he only threw the ball six times. But he's a guy that's got a lot of talent. So I wouldn't be shocked if – even though I think McLeod will start, I wouldn't be shocked if you see Fortin – in the game as well.
And that's one of the things, in fairness, Coach Scott, is the very fact that being this, well, I guess this will be game four for the Bulls. He's still trying to find a rhythm this time of the year. Any normal season, unless you have a really established quarterback like East Carolina now with Holton Naylor's, where in the recent times we had a whole bunch of quarterbacks we were trying to find our way. But I think that with adding the fact of COVID-19, that just adds another wrinkle to, guess, when it comes to uncertainty and this particular case with the quarterback position with USF.
Yeah, they only got one spring practice. So I think they were hoping to get a little bit of separation there, and it just didn't come to fruition. They had to cancel after one day. And then obviously there wasn't much to do over the summer with those guys, even though they probably went through themselves. It's not under supervision of the coaches, so you can't really get any separation there. And then Cade Fortin was, like I mentioned, transfer from North Carolina, was unavailable the first two games. We're still not quite sure why. So you're kind of even more behind just because of that. A guy you thought maybe would win the job, you had to hold off for 2 weeks. So they're still struggling to find any consistency at that position, especially in the passing game. They've been able to run with those guys a little bit, but they're not going to beat many teams if they can't throw the ball.
Yeah, Seth, against Cincinnati, USF quarterbacks threw five interceptions, but Desmond Ridder, the veteran quarterback of the Bearcats, was picked off three times, and USF forced four turnovers. So tell us a little on the defensive side of the ball what Pirate fans can expect out of the Bulls.
Well, I think you may see some similar looks to what ECU's been throwing out this year. I think they're going to play mostly. USF is with an odd front. And last week was kind of the first game they got to play against somebody conventional. They opened the season against Citadel, which runs the triple option. And then Notre Dame is just like a two tight end downhill power football team this year. And that was a terrible matchup for USF. So last week against a team that's in more 11 personnel and, you know, a little bit more spread looks, USF's able to play what I think how they wanted to, which is three down linemen, a lot of movement up front. A lot of blitzing, mixing up the coverages behind it, which I don't think is too dissimilar from what I've seen at ECU. It seems like ECU wants to bring a lot of pressure too and try to make kind of that, create that havoc in the backfield and maybe force some turnovers.
Jeff, one of the things that certainly next week when the Pirates play Navy, we'll have 3,500 fans here in North Carolina is what we're what our understanding. I think 7% is what we can have, and I'm hearing 12 or 13,000 down there with you guys with the USF. Is that true this week?
I think they gave the Bucks a little bit more leeway, but I think they kept USF at 8. And last I heard, they were pretty close to hitting that number. I think they're going to just slowly open up. But I think they were at 8, and there was like 650 tickets left last I heard. So there's probably going to be a full 8,000 people there. And it'll be homecoming week, which I think there's not many festivities. I don't think there's a parade or anything, but fans will be happy to be back in the stands at least and it'll be rambunctious.
Yeah, Seth, we were hoping Bubba was going to try to see if he could get tickets from you because I know he wants to go to that game. Right, Bubba?
Yeah, they've put put me on the spot there, as always. But no, we actually do have a member of our team, Sutton Young, who's a student in East Carolina.
Yeah.
He had some frequent flyer miles that he needed to use. So he is making the trip down. He's flying out of RDU. I guess it's about 6 or 7 o'clock on Saturday morning with the 7 o'clock PM kickoff.
Well, that should be plenty of time. Hopefully get in town and see go to one of the nice restaurants around here and get in for the game. I don't think he'll have too many people around him. It'll be a nice, comfortable seat for him.
I had a question, Seth, as far as the program is concerned, with Charlie Strong leaving and all that with the coaching change. How are fans now dealing with it? We know how closely you follow the program. How are fans dealing with the coaching change with Coach Scott? I mean, I think there's a lot of enthusiasm. It seems like from the outside looking in, from our vantage point, being a conference mate in the American, it was a good hire, a good recruiter. His dad, obviously, being the former South Carolina coach, I know he's on the staff there. But how are fans reacting to Coach Scott, and is there more enthusiasm now for the program?
Yeah, I think definitely the enthusiasm level has gone up, especially before the season. Now that we're into the season, you always get – your approval rating goes down a little bit every time once you kick off, right? But before the year, I think he was probably about at 100%. He's saying all the right things. He has a really good plan. I've seen him talk with the local high school coaches. They really like what he's done. And it's just – they were – the fan engagement was just at a low point. I think it's really one of the reasons they had to make the move on Strong. It ended up costing them a lot of money, and a lot of people that cover the team didn't think the money was there to be able to do that and do some of the other things they wanted, but it had gotten so bad that they had to make that move. And then not only did they make that move, but they went out and made a really good hire. Like you mentioned, is Coach Scott's pedigree, but he's kind of done everything right. Now they're playing games, you know, it's a little bit tougher now that you actually got to put it out there. But I think fans understand where the program is at and that it's going to take a while. And a lot of fans are just looking at this year. They're just hoping to see improvement from game one to the end of the season. If they see that, I think most of the fans will be very excited for the future.
And, you know, Seth, one of the things we had Jim Lauk, play-by-play voice of the Bulls. And one of the things that he brought up, and he was he's such a nice guy. He's been with us since the beginning of our podcast, but he brought up the point of the recruiting has always been good with USF and the American. And then the last two seasons with Charlie Strong, that has not been as good. And I want to get your I know you guys follow recruiting, obviously, with USF more than we do. We have, an outside look, you know, on the rest of the conference. But from our vantage point, it looked like the recruiting was down. How do you feel?
Yeah, I actually saw a stat somebody put out there that USF recruiting has actually – the ranking's gone down 9 of the last 10 years. Wow. So it's been a slide, but it's been kind of a gradual slide, and it's really kicked up the last couple of seasons. It's not just I think the recruiting classes, the rankings are getting worse, but it's also the type of player. Like I mentioned, you're in Florida and you don't have a ton of speed on offense. That's you know, that should not happen if you're in Florida, in Tampa. So it's kind of been a mixture of poor classes and then also kind of, you know, poor choices, I think, by the staff in the past, and just trying to fit into a bunch of different systems because you've had so much turnover. That offensive coordinator, for instance, you've had the system they tried to run last year was totally different than what they were running the 2 years before. So the guys they recruited for that didn't really work with what they wanted to do last year. And it's a little more similar this year, but it's still a new system. So you're just kind of constantly going against that turn in recruiting as well. But the recruiting is definitely taking a dip. Especially since Coach Taggart left.
And the world on I-4, one of the questions that I would want to ask is, has the rise of UCF contributed to in your recruiting problems in state when Florida?
I think there could be part of that. I know that they've been able to capture, because I coached at the high school level and at the college level, but I still kind of have friends at that level, and they tell me how those kids, what they kind of think of the programs. And UCF has kind of captured the minds of a lot of kids by playing fast and their style of football and the fact that they've been winning. But I think what they did a really good job of is understanding the kind of kid they need to go after in the state of Florida. USF's been sometimes are a little too caught up on size. And UCF's just gone after speed, and that's the kind of the great equalizer when you play some of these bigger teams. If you got speed everywhere, you're a tough cover.
No question. As far as USF is concerned, when you're talking about the plan, how long do you think, as far as fans are concerned with the USF, how long will they give Coach Scott? Because obviously we know that, like our situation, East Carolina, five straight losing seasons. The fans are very upset right now with the Georgia State loss, not on the loss, but how we lost. Mm-hmm. And that it's been so many losses in there, very ugly losses with the Montgomery era previously before Mike Houston. But how long do you think they'll give Coach Scott before things start getting like a potential hot seat?
I think he's got a few years. Like I said, people understand, I think, where the program's at. Even though they made a bowl game a few years ago, they ended on a six-game losing streak. And then last year, they only won four games. I think Coach Scott mentioned they've only won five of the last 20 games or something to that effect. So I think the fans understand where the program's at. If they see results somewhere, whether it's on the field or in recruiting, if they start to see some results, some positive results, he'll get more time. But I think he's got at least two or three years before any grumbling start. Of course, you have the maniacs that already started when you lose to Notre Dame, but you know, they're number five in the country. We all need to relax a little bit.
Yeah. And there's a reason usually for a coaching change. Sometimes it's because the coach has done very well. Mm. And as we found out with the American, they seems like the quote unquote power five, they seem to poach any great coach in the American, they're going to get that coach. And yeah, so yeah. This particular case, like ours after Montgomery, it was because the program was definitely not heading in the right direction. As far as the fan base, you guys, as far as rabid fans, will Pirate Nation be able to see that on Saturday night? I know it's kind of limited there with the number of fans, but how do you think that as far as the attendance, will you think there'll be all 8,000 USF fans?
Yeah, that's the last I heard is that they were really close to selling out all 8,000. Yeah. They may not be as rowdy as normal because I don't think they're selling alcohol this week. So that's going to cut down, I think, on a little bit of the rowdiness for some of the people. But they're just – I think the fans at this point are kind of just – they just want to see something positive. And if you give them something positive, something to cheer for, they'll get behind you and really get into it. Right now, I think they're just kind of – the last few years, they've been beaten down a little bit, and you've seen attendance start to drop. But you kind of just – you felt like you knew what was going to happen because it was the same kind of issues throughout the whole tenure. But I think if you give them something positive, something to cheer for, they'll come back out in droves. They've been there before, and the fan base only grows every year with such a young program. So I think if Coach Scott gives them something positive, something to cheer about, you'll see that support come roaring back.
It'll be great, and very happy for him. He did a great job at Clemson as a co-offensive coordinator, and certainly love to see the offense that he's going to bring to you guys. Hopefully not on Saturday night, but
if the last couple weeks is any indication, I don't think you will, but we'll see.
Yeah, no doubt. By the way, I want to ask you about recruiting before we let you go. How is recruiting? We were talking about recruiting. How is recruiting now with this regime, with the latest coaching staff? Is it a lot better than before, or how do you feel?
It seems to be better. They have a better ranking, you know, I guess, as of now than they have the past few years. They feel like they're almost done with their class. They kind of went the Clemson route of getting guys in early, and once you commit, you're committed. That's kind of the big thing at Clemson, right? Once they don't have to keep re-recruiting their same players. So they're kind of going that route. So they feel pretty close to done is what the rumblings are. They feel like they're almost finished already. And one thing that helped Coach Scott, I think, in this transition, especially in the COVID year, is he hired a lot of coaches that were in I think he hired three or four coaches from Florida Atlantic. So he's got guys that are kind of already have been recruiting the area. They have relationships with high school coaches. He recruited Florida. So it's not going to be as tough a transition, I think, for him to have to rely on the high school coaches because he can't get kids in for visits and things of that nature. So I think recruiting is going to be on the rise with him, and he seems to be doing a good job with it.
As we bring in co-host Kyle Barber, what's up, dude?
What's going on, guys? Better late than never.
So, you know, we're talking USF Bulls, it looks like. I guess pretty much everything's been discussed at this point. I really ain't going to have too much to add to the to the conversation, but I thought I'd at least come in. Have you guys talked about the quarterback situation? Who the hell's starting this week?
We think McLeod, but who knows? It may change from today till Saturday. I don't know. It may change Saturday morning to Saturday night. I don't think there's not a lot of great options, but the rumblings are it's going to be McLeod to start, and I'm sure you'll see another one though.
Gotcha. And you guys, how close to what you guys were doing offensively? Are you guys trying to do exactly what Clemson's been doing in recent years offensively? Is that what you guys look like?
I think there's a little bit of that. And then Scott hired Charlie Weiss Jr. from Florida Atlantic. They were a lot of up-tempo, perimeter run game, a lot of RPO stuff mixed in. Clemson did a little bit of that as well. But it's kind of a good mix of those two. But I think if you watch, it won't look too dissimilar to Clemson. You'll kind of see some of the same concepts.
Okay, so Weiss Jr. comes over from Florida Atlantic. He was there with Kiffin.
Yeah.
So watched some Florida Atlantic the last few years, so I kind of know what they look like. So, yeah, so it's kind of a merger of those two offenses, the Clemson offense and the Florida Atlantic offense. Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, a little bit. I'd say now it probably leans a little more Clemson just because Weiss was really heavy RPO, especially last year at Florida Atlantic, and I don't think he's got the guys right now at quarterback that can really pull that off and really, you know, make the quick read and then make a throw into tight windows or flip my hips and make a quick throw and quick decision. That doesn't seem to be their strength. So there's a little bit less of that. And right now you're kind of seeing more of just kind of a foundation level, more basic stuff. I think they're just trying to find out who they got. They've had to move. They still haven't had what they thought was going to be their starting offensive line. They've had guys out for undisclosed reasons in every single game. So they're still kind of, I think they're maybe kind of just kind of going through the basics just because they got to change guys out every single week.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I have two more questions for you. I know you guys had some trouble with COVID. Do you know what the numbers are looking like this week? I think you guys maybe had 10 or 12 guys out against Cincinnati. I don't know how that's looking for this week. And talk about your defense. I guess the secondary would be the strength of your defense.
Yeah, I think with regards to the COVID stuff, they don't really release much. I think it's kind of come down to they're taking the view of, you know, we're just going to say unavailable. He may be hurt. It may be an injury. It may be COVID. We're just going to say unavailable. So that had an impact. Like they did have 8 guys missing off the defense last week, 7 of which I think play quite a bit, but they played pretty well against Cincinnati. I think you're going to see, like you said, the strength is the back end, but they're going to be aggressive with that front 7 and try to generate some pressure through movement up front and blitzing. And then kind of put the pressure on their back end guys to make plays because I think they believe that's the strength of their defense as well.
Yeah, primarily man coverage.
They're mixing it up, but I wouldn't be shocked to see a bunch of man this week. But they've been mixing it up. They'll roll and do some different stuff. But I think if they're going to want to stay aggressive like they did last week against Cincinnati, you'll probably see a little bit more man.
Yeah, and if you got a good secondary, there's no reason not to be aggressive.
Yeah.
And the over-under on this game, I believe, is 55. I said take the under. Would you take the under?
Yeah. I will see. I'm trying to figure out one of these teams to get in the 30. So, yeah. I mean, we talked about it on our podcast this week. We're all hammering that under right now, and I think that would be the safe play.
Yeah, no doubt.
Speaking of which, Seth, how can people hear your podcast? I look forward to all three of us listen to podcasts because we're in the podcast community. How can people listen to your podcast? And obviously we want to plug your site too.
Yeah, our podcast is called the Bluminati Podcast. You can find it on Apple and all the normal podcast places. The Daily Stampede is where you'll see that. It'll be posted there, dailystampede.com. We'll be putting up kind of an East Carolina preview probably Friday. That'll include some looking at film and things like that. So if we try to get into scheme, but there's not a ton of it in the highlights we saw, but we'll try to do a breakdown every Friday of the opponent. And then every midweek, we break down the previous game. We try to go in depth, look at play by play and or all the big plays and break them down from a scheme perspective. So that could be something next week that might interest your listeners as we look back at the game from a USF perspective.
All right.
All right. Sounds good. Seth, man, thank you so much for being there. And hopefully you can sneak Bubba into the stadium on Saturday night. I'm sure he'll drive down there if you can do it.
Yeah, we'll try to share a press pass if you want. I'll drop it to you from the concourse.
All right, Seth. Thanks, man. Appreciate you, buddy.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys. Thanks for the invite.
All right. No problem. Anytime. All right. That was great stuff there from him. And I do believe, Bubba, if you had a chance, knowing you're the ultimate road warrior, maybe not animal or hawk, but you're the ultimate road warrior. And I think you would be down there and go to the game. And you could do some reports with Sutton.
It would always be fun to be there, but I'm afraid I'd probably pass on this one.
Bubba, your audio is really low, at least on my end.
Okay, I have no idea what's going on, but is it any better now?
Yep.
All right. But yeah, it would obviously be fun to be there, but we'll talk to Sutton and we'll be tuned in on ESPN+.
No doubt, guys. Kyle, want to get your thoughts about the game now that you come on with us. Wanted to see about what are your thoughts. What do you think?
I think it's probably a low-scoring game like everybody else. South Florida maybe has had their recruiting woes, but they're still more talented than we are. It's at home. We need to make some plays on special teams. I think that's where our advantage lies, is on special teams. I don't know. How many guys are they going to have out this week? Is it going to be 10 or 12 again? Are they going to have 8 guys out on defense? What's the situation going to be? The kid from North Carolina wasn't available until the Cincinnati game, and he played limited. And I guess maybe he was fourth on the depth chart because of that. Maybe he's moved up to 2 now. So is he going to come in as a surprise and light it up? We've seen to have that happen a lot over the years. But, I'm anxious to see what's going to happen. I got a feeling we're going to run the ball pretty well this week. South Florida's not as good against the run. They like to bring pressure. That can open up some run lanes, particularly if we can hit some deep balls. That could really open up the run game. I don't think we're going to abandon the run. Wouldn't be surprised to see us kind of bounce back and run the ball relatively well this week.
I tell you what, the thing for me, that very thing is the running game. We have such a good talent, there, and I don't know. I want to say that the defense. I think the defense will play much better because I think the offense is for South Florida is not as good as what we've seen in the past. And Bubba put up a stat up there on the ticker about the last time we played there. Remember, that was during the hurricane, and we were supposed to go to Virginia Tech, and we said, see you later, we're going to South Florida. And we almost pulled off that was a tight game, 20-13, so Raymond James Stadium. But anyway, I guess it gave us an extra week to practice for South Florida, but totally different time at East Carolina. I think we have more talent now. I think, guys, I was talking to Kevin Guidry earlier. Kyle was the very fact that we see some bright spots. If you could just play, it's such a cliche, 4 quarters of football.
Yeah. I got a new drinking game, guys. Every time Dave says very fact, I could drink. 4 quarters of football on the defense. Blake Anderson said one of the weirdest things I've ever heard a coach say. Blake Anderson, Jesus Christ. Blake Harrell said one of the weirdest things I've ever heard a coach say at the coordinator press conference yesterday. He said playing a full quarter game is like eating an elephant. You have to do it a bite at a time, and you have to take a game a play at a time. Never heard anybody compare anything to eating an elephant, but I get what he's saying. A game's a big, huge thing if you look at it, but you got to take it one play at a time. And if you take it one play at a time and have a short memory, which has been talked about, I've heard Coach Houston talk about that this year some, and Blake Harrell about having a short memory. That was something Coach Ruff used to say all the time about play the next play. And I think that's true, particularly when you've been losing a lot, play the next play. So they're saying the same thing, short memory, play the next play. I'm sure you guys remember Ruff saying that a lot, and that's something these guys have got to get through their head. Don't let one or two bad plays snowball into a bad football game.
And we got to win the middle eight, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That might have been a one and done thing. We might not be talking about the middle eight anymore.
Well, actually, I heard that many years ago in the early 90s. I remember Jim Valvano was on when he was doing the end of his life there when he was with Dick Vitale on college basketball. He talked about the last 5 minutes of the first half of a basketball game and the first 5 minutes of the second half. And he said, usually whoever wins the last 5 minutes of the first half and the first 5 minutes of the second half wins the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's nothing new. It's nothing new. I've heard, you know, Logan used to always talk about closing a half well and starting a half well. You know, it's nothing new. It's, you know, just a new way of saying the same thing.
No question about it. Bubba, do you think I know you're nervous about picking your Pirates this week, but do you think we have a chance?
Sure, we have a chance, but I'm not going to believe it until I see it. We're 1-9 all time against South Florida, and sure, that doesn't really have that much to do with this year, and there may be for a handful of those guys, and I mean, there could be like some type of you know, mental factor there, but all in all, that really doesn't have anything to do with this week. The biggest thing is, are we going to be able to muster any type of offense? And I really see this being a game probably fairly similar to what took place down there in 2018, USF winning 20-13. That's not necessarily my prediction, but I do think it will be a low-scoring affair that we're going to have to find a way to muster some offense to be victorious.
You guys want to give predictions?
Yeah, go ahead. What do you think, Kyle? I'll put you on the spot.
Put me on the spot, Dave. I heard just pitched it to you.
I'll do it. I mean, I know what I'm
all right. Go ahead, Dave.
I'm going with a Pirate victory. I'm going to say 27-21. And Pirates look a lot better offense, but still not the amount of points you would expect from them. But I think they'll, with the offensive struggles of USF, I think that will be a lot better this week.
I'm going to say Jake Verity makes three field goals. We get one offensive touchdown and a special team score, which will give us – how many points does that give us, guys?
That'd be 23.
23 points, and I'm going to say the Pirates win it 23-17.
That's actually what I was thinking, but in reverse, I'll go USF 23, East Carolina 17.
What? No, I know that's that is a strong possibility. This is for the
underdogs is at their place. So, yeah.
No.
So it's a lot more likely than not, but you know what? I'm going to go with the Pirates because, you know, why the hell not?
Yeah, and this game right here is for who doesn't want to finish last in the American, right?
Potentially, but you never know. You never know what's going to happen, particularly this year with COVID. I mean, we may play Cincinnati, and suddenly they got 17 players out, but decide to play the game anyway and beat them. I mean, who knows? But yeah, you would think whoever loses this game is staring last place in the face. And if you know, if you're the Pirates, just based on the schedule, and like I said, who the hell knows? But based on the schedule, you know, how many more wins are out there?
It's after last week, it's a very tough road to make it to a winning season. Although, like you said, Kyle, I've said at the beginning with Kevin Guidry, if you don't think you can win the games, there's no point to even play the games. I mean, if you walk out there and you think you're going to lose, you probably will lose. I understand the UCF situation, those games that are where there's a lot more talent than on the field than we have, but we've been known to be a giant killer. We've been known to have less talent to beat knockoff teams and upset them. So no reason why we can't. This is a 50-50 game, don't you think?
Yeah, a 50-50 game, but it's at their place. So
Yeah. I mean there are edges to them.
Yeah. It'll be to see how it plays out. I think the winner of this game comes away with a lot of momentum. I think the loser of this game is going to be digging themselves out of a hole.
What do you think, Bubba?
Yeah, I think USF will probably win the football game, just being honest. Last week I didn't have a great feel about it, but I went ahead and picked the Pirates and go down to Tampa and prove us wrong.
I think part of the problem is with our offense, is wrapping this thing up, is what we're trying to do on offense it's not predicated to winning with less talent. You know, it's an offense that, in my opinion anyway, you got to have, and it's going to sound so stupid because people are going to say, well, that's with any offense. But I think the air raid gave you an advantage, kind of like the triple option does, where you can win with less talent. You just need speed and put them in space and execute. I think what we're doing now on offense, you've got to have the talent to execute it. And to be able to run the ball effectively, you got to have the offensive line to run block, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, like I say, I'm encouraged by some things, particularly special teams. And sometimes if you got a low-scoring game, special teams can be the difference, and that's what I'm hoping for.
No question about it. It's going to be exciting. In fact, the game – guys, again, on before we go, we're going to promote things, but this, being ESPN Plus, if you don't have ESPN Plus, it's not a big deal. You can watch it on your phone. I'm going to actually have it up on the big screen on Saturday night, so you'll be able to you can do that by if you have a Chromecast or whatever, but it's not a big deal. Get ESPN Plus, only $5 a month. Come on, it's the cost of a cup of coffee. Get it, and especially if you're a sports fan, it's a no-brainer. And before we go, Bubba, I know we've got a big show tomorrow night, a lot of great content coming up over the weekend.
Yeah, week 6 of the college football season. Earlier this afternoon, guest co-host Jay Sonhalter and I, we caught up with John Lazer, the play-by-play voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies, in a big game this weekend with number 19 Virginia Tech going to Chapel Hill to take on the 8th-ranked Tar Heels. So we'll have that for you tomorrow night at 8:15, we'll have that recorded interview. Kicking things off at 8:00, Shane Matthews, the 2-time SEC Player of the Year at Florida, Gator Hall of Fame quarterback, he will join us. He hosts Pot Up with Matthews in the morning. So we'll join, or he'll join us, rather, to talk Gators and Texas A&M. Probably going to be playing in some nasty weather out there in College Station. Hopefully they'll be able to get that one in. At 8:30 will be Will Vandervoort of the Clemson Insider talking about the Tigers hosting number 7 Miami and Derek King and everything that they have going on with the Hurricanes. 8:45, Rennie Ngolia, ESPN analyst and UMass Hall of Fame running back. 9:15, Ryan Wallen of Al's Daily, Temple's 24/7 site, to talk about Temple playing its first game at Navy against the Middies. And then at 9:30, Palmer Toms of Dogs 24/7, which is Georgia's 24/7 sports site, talking UGA in Tennessee, which is another top 15 matchup. And that is an interview that we will be recording tomorrow afternoon. So an excellent look at week 6, and it will all start tomorrow night at 8:00 on Facebook and YouTube Live.
That's going to be fantastic. And don't forget, after the game, probably more like Sunday, we'll have our playback for the Pirates. It's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully we can be celebrating and, I guess, a virtual high five for a big game with the Pirates USF. All right, guys, thanks to Corey Glore. Thanks to Seth. Appreciate him coming on for sure, and hopefully we can get a win. We'll find out in the meantime. Kyle, by the way, speaking of Road Warriors, I know you're going to be going on a trip with your wife, Jessica. So please be safe. We want you in one, both of y'all in one piece.
Yeah, going up to App State Land to the Boone Blowing Rock area for the weekend. So hopefully we won't get COVID. I know they've had a lot of problems up there with COVID. So.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, you beat me to it. I was getting ready to say, I definitely don't want either one of you to get COVID, but have a safe trip, a well-deserved vacation for both of y'all. And we'll definitely talk some Pirate football, obviously, that will be Sunday, more than likely, again, for the playback. All right, until tomorrow night, we're going to have more of college football. We'll be talking about with Inside Slant. You've been watching and listening to the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.